Hello, and welcome to DM Workshop number 5. So this one took a while since the last DM Workshop. That's because we got a real fancy schmancy idea for this one.
Fancy schmancy.
Besides Revival, a Dungeons & Dragons real play podcast, I also play in a small group of one-shot campaigns, and they alternate dungeon masters that finally got to mine. And so me and Dan had the Dan from Revival, a Dungeons & Dragons real play podcast.
Yo.
Had the great idea to build the one-shot as part of a DM workshop to help people kind of figure out how they should go about making a campaign to make it the most fun.
Well, it really came about as part of people talking on the Discord. Some of the big questions that we always get is like, who wrote Revival? Or like, people will complain about, oh, I made this super cool session for my players, but they didn't care at all. What assholes? They're all terrible. And or like, you know, oh, I've got a game coming up. What should I do for my campaign? You know, all I've got is one session, and then, but I don't know where they're going to go from there. And people tend to put their energy and their focus into, I think, the wrong area when it comes to building a game. So we thought that it would be a good idea to sort of build a game live to show you how to build the framework for a session that'll actually be fun for your friends.
So starting from ground zero, my ideas for this one-shot campaign. So the character that I played in the in that game is just a big fat frogman. His name is Kane. He likes to play the banjo, and he came from the swamp. He's a frog folk person.
Frog folk.
And so when it got to my turn, I'm like, oh, you know what? I like frog people. They're fun. All right, so let's do mine's going to be in a swamp. It's going to be a swamp village. There's going to be frogs. There's going to be Cajuns. There's going to be Creoles. And then where do I go from there?
Well, the first thing that I would ask is, who are your players? How much experience do they have with role-playing?
So there's, not including myself, there's 3 players. One of them is Tim from Revival, a Dungeons & Dragons real play podcast. Then the other two are people who are either new to role playing or new to Dungeons & Dragons 4th edition.
Okay, so do these other two players have, like, do they have any experience?
They have some experience. The one who is new to role play, her character is it's a rogue. They've only played a few sessions. And then the other new player, he is eager to learn how to play the game. I helped him build his character, and we helped flesh it out from its original idea. And he's got a really simple character, keeping everything simple because he wants to start from the beginning and kind of get used to D&D because he wants to play it in the long term.
Okay. So they've already got their characters for this game already.
Yes, and the issue so with the characters, Tim's character is the kind of party dynamic is Tim's character is the leader and a religious zealot. The overall kind of story for each one of these campaigns is that the players are part of a group that's like it's a secret organization that its outward front is, you know, quote unquote the church. They send people out on these kind of small missions to check on various things throughout the world. That just kind of makes it easy out to connect all the different games if we needed to.
Oh, okay. So these characters are part of separate... Oh, okay. So you're doing sort of the rotating DM, rotating game situation where you're doing a... It's kind of similar to like to a video game style thing where you're doing like jump in co-op, right? Where for each individual mission, certain numbers of people from this organization get called to do things, right?
Yeah, so
it's the
previous
characters.
One was, oh, they just went out and we investigated like an alchemy lab, and then that led into like a Frankenstein type thing. And
okay.
The other one is, oh, we went here, we did this thing. And mine's like, okay, use this as a framework to go to this village, and we're going to figure something out from there.
Were you thinking of continuing this game specifically into a longer campaign, or did you want everything to wrap up at the end?
Wrap up at the end is a small, self-contained, one, maybe two session, probably two session game.
Okay.
definitely swamp related. And originally my plan, I was really thinking of doing a kind of murder mystery type deal. And then eventually I kind of worked my way back down from, okay, instead of a murder mystery, there is a mystery that's affecting the town, and the players have, they can brute force it, or they can try and connive it, or they can do a mix of both. Something that helps these other two newbie players see the opportunities that you can do to solve a problem in D&D.
Okay, so before we go for that, I want to roll back a little bit and just give me the rundown on who these characters are and what sort of things they've already done. Like, what type of people are they? Do they have, like, what are their, you know, specific values and everything? Because that'll really set the tone for what sort of obstacles and what sort of game you want to build for them.
So, the most well-developed character is Tim's. His name is Solomon. He is a kind of Warhammer style, where a dude's, like, very, very religious. He's very dedicated to the God and the mission of the church.
Okay.
So if the church gives him, this is what we need done, he's going to try very, very hard to get that done in just about any way possible.
Is he a letter of the law sort of guy, or is he like a rogue
letter
factor?
Of the law, definitely.
Okay.
The rogue factor comes from the other player, who her character is the rogue. It's not a very well-developed character. It's kind of it's just the rogue. We tried to get her to play a little bit more into it, but it's mostly, it's not like outright antagonistic, like I sit back here and I don't do anything, and she won't like go and stab people. So I don't have to worry about stuff like that.
But she's fairly
kind of a blank slate for the most part.
Okay. That's fine, as long as you have. So the things that I would want from that character before the game to begin with is, I would want them to do something, whether it's, you know, like a little quick, start of any Bethesda game style questionnaire, right? You know, like how in Morrowind you get the little selection of situations. Ah, yes, I see you were born under a certain sign. You know, those sort of like, someone has stolen your sweet roll. What do you do? Right? Like, have them do something like that for the character. And just see where they fall. That'll be pretty important for figuring out what to throw at this character to get them more engaged. And to sort of wrangle out some character development from them. Because you have to know where they fall in terms of alignment. And I don't mean, like, you know, the whole chaotic good, blah, blah, blah. I mean, like, what are their goals? What are their values? Because, you know, if in their mind, or when they start playing, if they start to think, oh, you know, actually my character is the sort of person who would be, you know, like, sort of conniving and doing a lot of trickery and social subterfuge. Or, oh, my character is the sort of person who has a lot of empathy for people who come from bad situations. You know, I grew up an orphan or whatever, right? There's a lot of different possibilities for the archetypical rogue character to fall under. You know, whether it be like the noble thief Aladdin type, the like little street urchin just stealing to get around, or whatever, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. And whatever the fact they kind of fall into.
And the fact that they're working for this church organization means that they've got some sort of stake in whatever the church's stated goals are, which I have no idea what they are. What is this deity? And do they all work for this one church and are assumed to be worshippers of this same deity?
They're assumed to be worshippers and missionaries of it, but the church is just kind of a front for, you know, the underground deep state, you know, the thing that's working in the background that probably wouldn't ever come up until like much, much later after a few campaigns where they get to an overarching thing.
Okay.
So it's just like, this is the background. These are setting you up. Solomon is the one that is actually very, he's the one that's into the religion. The other two, not so much. The third character, his is, it's not a blank slate like the second character. His character is it's a kind of simplistic wizard. Wizard wants to be strong and powerful like one of their relatives, but man, they are wimpy. They are not very strong. Instead, he's like, well, I don't know, maybe I could try magic. That'll probably make me strong. And then ends up not being very confident in his ability to do magical stuff. Ends up kind of as he relegates himself to a supporting role and not going to the front despite wanting to. So that I can see, I can easily kind of push him to do more combative, aggressive things for his character to try and get into that. It leaves that big open spot for his character to want to do those types of things.
I don't think that necessarily should be aggressive. I think it should be assertive is the thing that you're going to want to think about for that.
Yeah.
So not necessarily going out and fighting people, but there needs to be, this would be a very good situation to give that character a point of mastery and a point of being the only competent person in the room. The person that everybody else needs to turn to. And then give them the opportunity to step up and take control of a situation with their specific skill set. That would be a good point. This would be a good situation to try and build a scene for that. My big question, though, considering that this is a rotating DM sort of thing, I don't know how much you guys have all decided, but is it assumed that the church that you guys are working for has, like, that the underground stuff that they're doing is bad? Are the players being used, manipulated, or lied to by this church?
Out of character, it's assumed by all of us that that's a pretty easy possibility for the association to do. The very first campaign where Tim ran it was go and check out this situation. Is this guy using... He was, the Frankenstein thing. Is he creating life through scientific means or holy means? Because if it's holy means, we got to stop that, because that's our job. He can't do that.
Okay,
if it's scientific, sure thing.
That leads me to the question, what is this deity? And what are the tenets of it? Like, what are the values? What are the rules here?
I don't remember what the deity was. The only one that really mattered in what they were doing was Solomon. It was, I know it was like a D&D day. I think it was Tiamat.
Tiamat? Wait, straight up like the evil hoarding dragon?
Maybe not maybe the opposite one.
Bahamut.
That's it, I think.
The platinum dragon?
Maybe.
Okay. So if you're going to go this, I think... When you're building something like this, you do need to really know where you want to go with things. If you have the control to, like, if your player, the rest of the people in the group wouldn't think that you're outstepping your boundaries by establishing lore, then you do want to decide when you're building this if the players are being manipulated and lied to, or if the... Basically, are they working for the secret good guys, or are they working for the secret bad guys, right? Are they doing secret underground subterfuge work because the enemy or whatever is also doing secret stuff, but it just needs to be kept under wraps because it's too dangerous, and if word got out, there'd be panic and blah, 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 you know, or whatever the reason is, like, we don't want them to know that we know or whatever, or is it... You know, the bad side of doing good, where all of this, you know, law-abiding blah 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 stuff leads to, you know, Inquisition-style fuckery.
Yeah, definitely. From the feeling of the previous games, it does. It feels more Inquisition, where sending people out if someone is essentially getting in the way of the front of the church is either way to make money or presence. Because the first one, that first campaign was because that guy was doing things that the church was supposed to be the only one able to do. So they wanted to check him out, see if they needed to get rid of him or coerce him or do whatever.
So I think it's kind of like a mob feel.
A little bit.
Like a mafia feel almost then.
Yeah.
Like they're encroaching on your turf.
What I was thinking originally for this one was So because the wizard player is new, he wasn't there before. The other player had to drop out. And so I decided that, okay, so this wizard is known by his relative that's connected to the church that chose him for, that recommended him for this mission. This mission was go to this village and find out why we haven't received a shipment of a thing, either like a rare item or like some economic thing that's unassuming or something like that. Because, okay, oh, this is not a, this doesn't come across directly as you're going to go fight something. And that's okay, why he was kind of chosen in there.
So the setup for this, the reason that they've been given to go to this frog village full of Creole frog people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the village has gone dark and hasn't given the church a shipment of something.
And not so much that they've gone dark, but they were waiting for a specific thing to reach them, to be either snuck into the shipment or to be like a shipment of goods that was kind of like something that was some big deal.
If some you're big going deal to go
that
with...
was kind of like getting pushed along the chain, it started somewhere else, got to the village, was supposed to go from the village to another drop-off location, never got there.
Okay,
go out there and find out what happened.
If you're going to go down the route of the players are being used and or manipulated and or lied to, don't tell them what the item is. Mm-hmm. Just give them the setup being, you know, give them the scene of them getting their mission. Whatever the item was supposed to be put into, like whatever that shipment is, just tell them that. Don't tell them about the secret thing. Just tell them that there is also a sensitive package directly from the leader of this place that was supposed to come to us, and, you know, don't open the package, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it contains very sensitive, fragile materials that will be damaged if you open the package. Don't open the package, right? So we've got a big old shipment of, let's say, what's like something that this... What's the general area that they're going to? It's like a swamp?
Yeah, it's deep in the swamp. What I was thinking was it's like a particular fruit only grows deep into the swamp, you know, gator fruit. It's something that the village uses that's their main source of exports.
Okay.
They get these things, they send them out, that's how they make their money.
So considering that you've got this new bright-eyed wizard kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is this village, and are these frog people, are they going to be like shamanistic? Are they going to be followers of this same deity that the players are from? Do they have any sort of folk magic or anything like that, or are they just frog people?
Well, the way that I was thinking of the frog people was they are very family-centric. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of frog spawn. They have a lot of children. People, they kind of form these cliques. They are very within their own circles.
Mm-hmm.
And they also have a good appreciation for good food, good music, and good company.
Mm-hmm.
They're friendly to people. If, you know, as long as this person's, you know, well, I'm willing to associate with you, see how you are, you know, offer you a drink, offer you some fine down-home cooking. Generally mm-hmm. nice people. But if you are considered, like, something that's not good or, like, an outside force that's negative mm-hmm. or not seen well socially, they aren't going to want to be near you. They aren't going to want to associate with you. Because you are seen as bad juju.
Okay, so they're superstitious.
They are superstitious and shamanistic, kind of. There's a very strong appreciation of music in the village. They have a whole thing going on there.
So
not
basically
tribal,
just so more like folksy traditions and what comes with that of generations of, you know, specific and weird superstitions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you want to have these... Do you have an idea of what the thing that they're supposed to get is. Like, the secret hidden thing.
It could be unrelated to what's happening there.
You want it to be related to what's happening there.
Yeah, the very original idea I had when I was first kind of laying it out was... Because I was keeping it real simple, streamlined for him. I was thinking, okay, there's an item that is in here. It's like this big kind of magical artifact. Someone in the village or working for an outside source knows that it's there, steals it, causes a distraction through some source. When we were speaking, we came up with a pretty good one. And then they use this distraction to try and sneak it out.
Mm-hmm.
To steal this item and get it to wherever they needed to go, and then pin the blame for it on someone else, probably going to be like, you know, the party or some other.
So an outside entity, not related to the church, is going to try and steal this item.
So at roughly the same time, the church arrives, the church representatives, and then another outside force that's not, you know, as blatant. It's someone sneaking in there.
Okay.
Not just not being obviously from outside. Two strangers enter. One of them they know is a stranger. Distraction happens. Blame is most likely going to fall on them. Person tries to take the item. It swoops out of there.
Okay, so they've got a distractionary force. Okay, so before we go too far into depth, what's the window dressing for the scene? Like, when they get there, is there anything special going on? Is there an event happening, maybe?
So, there is an event happening. What it is every 5 years, there is the Bayou Burgu Festival.
Okay.
The extended families of the whole, I think the name I came up with was Pollywog Pond. Something goofy like that. Everyone comes in there, they're extended families. Everyone comes back home to the village for a week-long festival. You got good food. You got your swamp banjo, your swamp jug, your swamp accordion, your swamp fiddle, swamp harmonica, swamp mouth harmonica, your harpsichord, etc., etc. Everyone swamp there is having a good time. Everyone's getting everything. So when they get there, I don't know if I want them to already be in the middle of the festival. I'm thinking I want to have that because once the distraction event happens, the festival is probably going to be put on hold. So mm-hmm. I'm thinking either they're setting it up, or it's right in the first day of the festival when the players will arrive. So everyone's there, and the town is very, very busy. There's a lot of activity going on. And at the same time, every year, this is the thing that we came up with when I first brought up the campaign to you was...
Crap, now I'm remembering. You told me about this session, what was it, like a couple of weeks ago or a month ago or something?
Yeah, something like that. It was a while ago.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, give them the thing. But now I'm starting to remember that concept. And I think that this is the concept that you should go for. It leaves a lot of open-ended stuff. But yeah. Go.
So there's a coming-of-age tradition that they have for these frog folk, which once a tadpole has grown to having legs, they're still very small, but, you know, they've got the legs. This is the sign that now they need to... group together, so all the families that have these tadpoles at the time will gather them together, and they're kept in like an ornate ceremonial jar. The community gives their blessings, words of good fortune, and all that. And what makes this even more special is that this is coinciding with that Burgu festival, so it's an even bigger deal. You've got, you know, the real good luck. You know, these kids are gonna they're gonna open the jar. The kids are gonna go into the swamp. Leave and then come back after like 2 weeks. Frogs grow fast. 2 weeks,
yeah.
And they're old enough to now start contributing to the village and start doing things, and they're considered adults.
Yeah. So, the concept you told me about this concept before, and I really like the idea of this jar being part of being the actual item that the church wanted. So, the idea that you told me, the exact specifics don't really matter, you know, like they could have the festival every year at around the same time, and then once every 5 years, it's like the super big special one. where, you know, these are like, this is like a really good year to have your coming of age thing happen during this, but it's sort of a, the gritty details of what goes on there is kept mostly a secret from outsiders because superstition and whatnot. You know, all the outsiders know is that at the start of the festival, everybody's having a great old time, and then, like, near the end of the festival, or, like, at the midway point, or whatever it is, all of the young, like, fresh-faced adult frog people come out of the swamp and join in the festivities, too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's part of the big thing, is that, like, first couple of weeks, or, like, the first week is for... is for just, like, the old folks, like, the old folks and tiny little children, and you don't see any of the young kids, and then, like, the young adults, and then on the second week, all the young adults come back, and they bring, like, food and various things from the swamp, like, and they tell everybody that they were out, you know, like, on a hunting expedition or something like that or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. They're gathering supplies for the festival. And what it really is they send the tadpoles into the swamp as per the, you know, old traditions, and you make them kind of like a Spartan thing where the ones that come back get to integrate themselves into frog society. Like, it's a pretty messed up coming of age ritual. Yeah. But
one of the things that I was thinking of was part of it was, so these tadpoles that do go out, they learn they have to stick together because tadpoles can't do much. That's where you kind of get those where you start getting the formation of, like, those cliques and stuff. They stick together while they're out there doing their things.
And they forge their own clans.
Yeah, and the tadpoles that aren't really part of those groups, they either are killed by the swamp, or they don't come back to the village and they stay where they are.
Yeah, they splinter off.
Yeah, one of the potential... so, you know, the big important thing that happens, the thing that happens is that ornate ceremonial jar with the tadpoles is stolen. And I really like what you brought up, having that be the item, because then that also makes the players think, well, okay, if we're listening to the church, we have to take this jar. This is part of... not only is this, like... okay, number one, the jar is gone. Number two... this is an important thing to these people. Can we just steal it?
Right. Well, that's the thing, is that you've got to, you want to set it up so that under normal circumstances, they wouldn't have even known that they were taking it, right?
Yeah.
And you also want to give hints that the frog people in the village really don't necessarily want them around. They're, you know, they're happy and everything, but a certain number of them have, you know, like, looks, like, somber looks on their faces because they know that, oh yeah, this year is the year where the church comes and takes the jar. You know, like, and the church has to give them some sort of reason, you know, like these kids are going to be raised by the church into, you know, clergy or whatever like that. Like, you know how people would send kids off to the churches to get raised and be part of the clergy and things like that. So it's not like, you know, straight up kidnapping or whatever. But it is like a, oh, this is kind of sketchy.
Yeah. I'm not really digging these people coming in here. I don't like this situation, but I know.
Yeah, the frog people are like, okay, this is, it's been part of their society for so long that they've gotten used to it, and it's not even seen as a bad thing. It's like, oh, these are like, you know, these kids are blessed. They're going to go off and do big, important, holy stuff. Like, that's a much better life than being a bunch of swamp frogs.
And then some people, like, I could see some of the older frogs kind of, I don't, like, you know, appreciating the simple things, like playing my jug and drinking my amphibian ale while I'm playing my banjo here.
Right, people, there's definitely going to be, like, the people who
I don't
are...
think so. Yeah, they go off to the church, blah, I don't like it. I don't like it. Ain't nothing wrong with sitting here in the swamp.
Right, and of course you're going to want to have, you know, like, basically, it's not like they're going to put literally every single kid that's going to be coming of age into the same gigantic jar. That would be huge.
Yeah.
Right? So it's going to be, they take one of them. Right? So... But I so this is the point then where the secret sauce of how the sausage, you know, this is how the sausage is made for making a good session, which mm-hmm. is who steals the jug and for what reasons will change based on your player's perceptions. And I don't mean perception roles, I mean how they act. So if your players get into the place, right, eventually are the players going to be blamed for stealing the jug, do you think? Is that what you were going to go for?
So there's a few different, I was thinking of a few different culprits for who was going to steal this jar. Number one would be, the people who would be blamed would most likely be either the players or, so at the very, very start, I intend to have a skills challenge where they're getting from the swamp to it itself is kind of like a fun, like, okay, here. Because I'm also teaching, you know, the wizard player how skill challenges work, how combat mm-hmm. works. As part of that combat, I was going to have who was going to be potential red herrings, unless, like, the players really fuck everything up, then I guess it was their fault, which would be Ripgill Clan, which is the people who don't live in the village. These are people who are out in the swamp
mm-hmm.
that formed their own smaller community. That doesn't have the structure that the village has. It doesn't have that the trade routes going through, giving them money, giving them all the things they need. So they're a little bit more savage, more highwaymen style.
I would avoid doing a skills challenge or combat or introducing those guys until the players already have been to the village. I think they should get to the village first. So.
One of the things I was worried about with the clan, though, is that if I introduce quote-unquote enemy to them, I don't want them to tunnel vision and be like, oh, well, obviously these people must have done it. These guys are bad.
Right, and that's why I think you shouldn't do a combat with them from the start. What I think you should do is, I just was thinking it through and I went, If they were supposed to take a jar anyway, the frog people wouldn't get mad if the jar went missing, right? And the players wouldn't know that it went missing because they're not supposed to know. Mm-hmm. So what you should do is there should be multiple jars and all of them went missing.
Okay, because this even opens up for someone within the village itself being like, I don't want to do this anymore. We shouldn't be giving our kids to these people.
We shouldn't be giving our kids to these people.
That could be their motivation.
And so here's what I would do. Here's the window dressing that I would do. The festival is in full swing. Players get there. You know, there's a big applause and whatever as the people from the church are here. And, you know, they get taken in as guests of honor. They have a fun old time. And then at some point, you know, an outsider frog from that, what was it called? The Ripgill Clan?
Mm-hmm.
Right? A couple of those guys show up and start starting shit. Right? They're coming in to get some food and things, but they're clearly not welcome. And how, like, you want to make them maybe, like, a little bit bitter, but not necessarily, like, look like bad people. They're outsiders, yeah. And the way that the frogs treat them, as opposed to the players, should be very different.
They'll treat the players as... They'll welcome them in. Here, try one of these. Try one of these fried mosquito wings. You know, here, try blah 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 blah.
Right, but then these guys show up and they just turn cold to them.
Mm-hmm.
Right, they just start treating them like shit, and from what the players see, entirely unjustifiably. They're outsiders.
They're dressed a little bit rougher than the rest of these frogs, but besides that, they seem perfectly normal.
Yeah, but they just like they treat them like shit, and they basically kick them out. So at that point. Right, you have your big old theft thing go down, and the players get woken up probably, and all of the jars are missing, and a couple, like one of the frogs, like maybe one of the frog mothers, gets all upset and yells something along the lines of like what, just taking one, some of them wasn't enough for you? Like they think that the players took all of them and they were altering the deal, right? Mm-hmm, at which point the players have no idea what the fuck is going on. They don't know what they're talking about. You know, and then the frogs don't give any more information past that. So, you know, maybe then you explain to them what the thing that they were going to get was. right? Have one of the frog people explain to them what the thing they were going to get was.
Mm-hmm. The kind of the frog mayor with his little petticoat and all that, telling him, he's very frustrated. Like, this isn't what I agreed to. This isn't what any of us agreed to. And then explain to them this, this is a situation that church takes one jar, and that is, part of our deal with them for XYZ, whatever superfluous reasons.
Right. And, give some amount of evidence, things, basically, here's the trick here is to change the evidence that the players are guilty based on what they do, right? So throw a couple of situations at them that could implicate them.
And see how they go about it.
Well, yeah, and then alter the frog people's evidence based on those reactions. You do it during the festival scene.
So, like, for example, if Marcosius the Rogue is just kind of thinking like, oh, well, I'm going to see if I can sneak and kind of look inside this house and, like, for the DM, like, there's no real reason to, but yeah, I'll go ahead and let you do it. As a player,
it's like
you
guys seemed really like you were suspicious. She was sneaking around and trying to look into my house. Like, that seems really suspicious. We did hide the jars in a different place this year.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right? Like, or, how could they have known? Or
if the wizard refuses to eat any of the food at the Burgoo, they can worry about like, oh, maybe did they even, What did you poison the food too?
Yeah,
stuff like that.
And based on the fact that they don't have the information about the jars, then you give them, they would say like, don't try and play dumb. How could you be from the church and not know? Like, that's really suspicious. Are they even from the church, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of thing. Have them get suspicious. So then the player's obvious first thought, their probable first thought is those fucking, vagrants took the jar, right?
Yeah.
If that's their first thought, then that's what happened. If their first thought is, basically, whatever the player's hypothesis is what you go with.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming that it's, semi-reasonable. Like, if the players think that they're being set up by the frog village, then they are. You want to reward the players thinking creatively. And if the players think that they get set up by the church, then they are.
Okay, yeah, because it feels nice to... I can't prepare for all of these things. I can't prepare for every single thing that they're going to do. You have to improv a lot of these things.
You have to improv.
But you have those moments where it's like, this thing, they're general enough, this thing's general enough that I can apply this to a lot of different situations. I just kind of change the little bits. Like that episode of the Dave Chappelle Show where they made a turd out of a Snickers bar.
Yes. So... The other big point of contention and the big turning point here is their perception of the frog village after they learn the truth. That this festival is kind of window dressing for a big coming of age festival, and that it's kind of brutal. Where these kids are getting sent off into the woods or they're getting sent off into the swamp, and the ones that come back get to integrate into society. And if they think, like, that's terrible, how could the church let them do this? Then that's what's going on. Then then you have it be that the Ripgill clan, whatever guys, are the good guys.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That was one of the early possibilities I was thinking was, you've got these outside people, they have, they're part of the frog folk, but they're not part of that society. I could easily use these guys for... If the players like the frog people, they're like, oh man, this is terrible. Here, it was probably these guys, probably these fuckers. We're gonna go teach them a lesson. Then Ripgill probably did it. They did it because whatever reason that they have for getting rid of them.
Reason would be that if this big old settlement goes without an entire generation of of youngins, and instead those kids get, you know, like they bring them in and go like, they were going to send you off to die in the swamp. Stick with us, kids. We'll make sure all of you guys, you know, you all grow up big and strong, and you're like, we'll show those fuckers. That's one route you could do. You could also very easily do it if you wanted to throw a curveball at them and make them actually make a harder choice, depending on, you know, like reading the room and figuring out what your players like. You could put them between a rock and a hard place of having the Ripgill people having taken the kids and then holding them for ransom. Right? Like, both groups of these, you know, then you would make it so that both groups of the Frog Society don't really give a shit about these tadpoles. Right?
They're both using them for bad reasons.
You know, like, one of them is doing a culturally significant but kind of backwards coming-of-age ritual, and the others are a bunch of, you know, jaded, abandoned kids who are now trying to get back at the society that sent them out to die. But it depends on how you want to play the church. I would go with that route if you wanted the church to be the good guys. If you wanted it to be that the church set up this whole exchange thing because they couldn't convince the frogs to not send all of their kids into this, you know, horrible coming of age ritual. They were like, okay, just we'll take in some of them and raise them to be clergy and provide, you know, safety for them in exchange for some goods and trade with you guys, right? Like, that's one of our conditions for trading with you, is that we're going to need to, you know, like, and they're trying to do it to sort of phase out this backwards ritual. That's if the church are good guys. If, like you said, the church are not necessarily good people, then you want to make it more of these, the frog people in the swamp are, they're against both sides of it, right? They see it as, so our two choices that aren't even our choice when we're growing up is, our two options are, we get sent out into a swamp to fight for our lives, to get a chance to come back. And even then, it's like a gossiping, superstitious society, and we don't even like it. Or we get sent off to who knows where to work for some church. You know, like, they've got, like, a couple of guys who broke out of being clergy and came back to the swamp and you know, were aghast at how their, what, like, their home society was like, right? Their cultural heritage was this backwards thing. When, you know, the church had told them that it was all great and all the frog people are, they're having a great old time out in the swamp and they sing songs and they eat good food and blah, blah, blah. So if you're going for more of a the church are fucks route, which that's assuming that the big thing is that since you have a true blue believer in your team, in Tim's character, he needs to be okay with the idea that the church are fucks.
Oh, he's 100% okay with it.
Okay, if he's okay with that and he wants to have his character go through that sort of character arc of becoming disillusioned or having to, like, make hard decisions like that, then I think that would be a really good way to go about it.
Because these... Because I can even see it from where he's coming from, where these children have... They're not even old enough to be considered responsible for their own actions. They don't have any sins on them. They don't have, you know, they're being affected by these outside influences. These children have committed nothing wrong. It's they shouldn't be forced to do these types of things. You know, this is not fine. This is not okay.
So the first big gameplay thing that I would give them is figure out who took the jars. That's gameplay thing number one. And you want to change who took them based on what their assumptions are. So you want to have a couple of contingency plans. One contingency plan is the Ripgill guys are good guys. And they took the jars because they want to save the kids, right? Another contingency is that somebody else, a rogue agent within the church, took the jars and just bailed. Right? And now they've got to go hunt him down. And then you would have to figure out who that was, if that's what they think happens, or if that's kind of like the feel that you're getting from the room is that that would be something they would be interested in. That's another option. Mm-hmm. Yet another option is somebody within the village took the jars, some sort of like activist, right?
Either that, because, either an activist for someone who's trying to change it, or to go even more into petty stuff, someone who was a rival to the mayor who wanted something to shake it up so that...
Yeah, he wanted to frame him.
He's
you know?
Willing, yeah, willing to, you know, put these children at risk so that he can get this guy kicked out and become the mayor, because he's just like, they're that shitty.
Because that's a reasonable thing for the players to think, is... Mm-hmm. If they would go, like, they might ask the mayor, do you have any enemies? Right? That might be one of the things that they ask. And at which point you go, why, yes, of course. There was the man who ran against me for mayor. Right? Mm-hmm. Boom. And then if they go, okay, we'll go investigate that guy, then you have them be connected to it. If you want to build it out further, you have him be connected to it and have him have given the jars to the Ripgill clan. Right?
Okay.
That way you can work it back. If you want the end game to be the jars are with the Ripgill clan, then you can have that happen, but you have to have multiple different avenues of getting to that scene.
And not have any of them feel kind of lame or contrived. You want them all to feel natural. Because the players don't know if I have all these different plans in place. They only know of what they're causing to happen.
So, if that's the endgame that you want to give them, that they end up interacting with these, with the, you know, like, kids of the swamp, right?
Mm-hmm.
If that's how you want that to go down, then you give multiple different routes towards the Ripgill clan has the jars. The question is, who got it for them? And that'll change depending on how they interact with the scene. So, it could either be a political enemy, it could be an activist within the village who is sick of this whole ritual and of giving things to the church. It could be a church operative who is, you know, he's fed up with this as well. He can't believe that the church is just, you know, is turning a blind eye towards this barbaric ritual and is going to go give the jars to, you know, the group of frogs that he believes actually... actually give a shit. And, you know, the Ripgill clan, I think that the better way to do it is they're rough around the edges, but they're not necessarily bad people.
Mm-hmm. They were dealt a pretty shitty hand by being part of this society where you just, all right, dump you into the water. Now, hope you survive.
They're pretty much entirely self-sufficient, but they're being actively blocked from trade. Right?
Yes.
Because they're still seen as children because they never completed the whole ritual thing. So if they come in to the village and try to trade, like they try to get medicine or anything like that, they don't give it to them. They won't even let them buy it. You know, stuff like that. And then there's no other like big civilizations anywhere near them, so they can't really get a hold of it any other way.
Yeah, the only way that they can get access to them is by being, is it brigadiers? Or is that like a boat?
I would say that you would make them, like, just have them basically just rob the frog people. They don't fuck with anybody else.
I don't think it would be too odd for the Ripgill clan there to, especially because knowing what the church does to the tadpoles when they take the jar, I don't think it's too out of the way for them to see people coming in from the church. You know, they've got like the logos and stuff on their outfits to be like, oh well,
yeah, they've got
what?
The holy symbol.
Let's go in there and see if we can take some stuff from them. You know, these people are a bunch of fucking pricks.
Yeah, you have them the Ripgill clan would have a legitimate reason to be distrusting of or outright hateful towards the players for being part of this organization. And you could have a very tense diplomatic situation where the players have to explain that they had no idea what was going on, assuming that they actually give a shit, right?
That the players care about the whole thing.
Right, this can all go south real quick if the players are just like, whatever, we're just here to do our job.
yeah, if Tim's character doesn't see the issue with it, believes entirely in the church, and the other characters, because what I'm hinging on, or one of the potential things that could happen is that the wizard character is not okay with it, despite despite Tim's character, and kind of speaking with Tim's character, try to make him understand that this is not, even if he believes wholeheartedly in church, this is not something they should be doing, or this is not, because this seems like the type of thing that the wizard character would be against.
Right.
This is something that he would feel strongly about.
Regardless of how they feel about it, though, right? They're going to, as, unless they, like, literally just stick their head in the sand and say, we don't want to play the session.
Mm-hmm.
If the jars go missing and their job from the church is to get them back, or they start to rebel against the church a little bit, either way, they need to go find the jars. There's not really an out that involves them entirely not caring about the jars, other than going back home and just saying, eh, fuck it.
Yeah, the jars are gone. Someone took them, so...
Which wouldn't be in character for any of them. It wouldn't be in character for any of them, and would be a result of literally metagaming.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's... At a certain point, there's a level of consideration that needs to be given towards what if the players don't care, but there's also a level of what if the players don't care that is, then fuck these guys, they don't even want to play, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's kind of like if you were making a first-person shooter game and you went around and you were saying, okay, but what if the players don't want to shoot a gun? And it's just like, well, then don't play a fucking shooter.
Mm-hmm.
So, any way that you cut it, they're going to have to investigate. So, they can either try to just, depending on how they work things, I see a couple of different options for when they get accused of taking the jars, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, they can either attempt to just diplomacy their way out of the situation and convince the frog people that they didn't take them, which needs to be an option. Right? Just clearing their name by name alone. Just saying, like, we didn't do it. We didn't even know that this was a thing. I'm being completely earnest with you. Check our bags. Check everything. We didn't do it.
Yeah, you know, check. It would make complete sense for them to have with them, you know, like, this is the mission from the church. Solomon would have, you know, a journal.
Yeah,
of
the writ.
Everything he's done. They could check it back. Oh, well, yeah, there's absolutely nothing in there, which by itself doesn't mean they didn't know, but on top of all three of them, they must be telling the truth. They've never been out to this village before, you know, they've never done, so it's feasible. And then, you know, as
and
long
then
as they
you would have
to,
them request yeah. And then you would have them request help, right? Because you're part of the church, this is why you're here. Like, this is part of the agreement that you guys would send aid, and now we need aid, so help. So then that would break into the first big thing, which is investigation.
All right. So, yeah, so the easy one, if we have the, so if they have the Ripgill showing up in town while the players are there and getting mistreated, they'll probably be the number one in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Alternatively, I want to have the options open for each one of the different ones. So if they, because I don't want to just like split it across NPCs like it's a video game. Like, oh, if they talk to this specific NPC, because that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
So
one other thing,
I feel like
actually,
I should do it based on how. So if a player assumes and starts looking and speaking with people, like, hey, so what's been going on in town or whatever, they can explain the. Old man Jenkins over here will explain this is the ceremony, this is what we do, and then kind of be curt with them.
Yeah, yeah.
But some of the younger
they don't
ones
like talking
are
about it too much to outsiders. But yeah. One thing that you're going to want to account for and think about is the possibility that when the Ripgill people show up, that the party intervenes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The party gets between the two of them and says, like, hey, now why are you guys, you know, what's the situation here?
That's a great setup to then be able to accuse them of being in cahoots with them.
Yep.
that is an easy out, a very, very easy out to say they defended the Ripkill people. Like, why would members of the church defend them? You know, and then that would lead to more distrust. That's something that you're going to have to think about. And you also have to think about them choosing a nuclear option with that. Players do tend to get extreme with things like that, you want to have the Ripkill people and the villagers' spat be mutual and ambiguous. You want to have it be like, you know, somebody calls these guys a thief, they say, no, you're setting me up, we just wanted to get some medicine, we just wanted to get some food, we're hungry, and then, you know, they shoo them out of town, nobody comes to blows. Nobody threatens anybody, everybody's just telling them to get out, there's just an argument, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because, and you want to make it, you do not want to have them get accused of theft or be in the act of thievery in that moment, because players will assume, based on metagame knowledge, and it's really hard to break people of this, they'll go, oh, this is the combat thing. I'm going to rush them. Like, I'm going to rush the thief. I'll pull out my sword and I'm going to rush the thief, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's what you want to avoid.
I want to make sure that they know that these are non-combatants. They can... I, as far as I know, neither one of these three will, like... take the kill option if they see someone stealing. Solomon might threaten them, but that would be about it. Threaten them to, like, leave.
Yeah.
That would be about as far as I expect Tim would do it.
What I like with this, and where I would go with it, is I would have a small contingent of them. Maybe, like, three or four. You've got one guy with, like, a broken arm or, like, a bad gash or something like that, and you got the leader of the Ripkill clan or one of their, like, one of the big guys, probably the leader. And you have him show up, you know, the music stops, everybody stops eating. And,
record,
you know,
scratch.
Yeah, you know, like, he starts yelling at people like, my friend's hurt, we need help. You know, you bastards, give us some fucking medicine, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Like, have them be aggro about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, have them be aggro and kind of assholes, but, you know, nobody is stepping up to help. Nobody gives them the time of day, and everybody just tells them, like, go back to the swamp, you bastards, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you give the players the opportunity to either interact or not interact, so you have contingency plans for both, right? Like, either, you know, at least have a plan for what happens if they talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that'll come just by having decent character written for all of them, you know? Think up the character of the leader of the Ripkill clan. What's he like? What was his life like? What would that lead him to be like? And, you know, we both really like magic and whatever, so I would suggest, you know, doing that that whole color pie thing that we talked about before.
You know, for each of the PCs that they'll most likely be speaking with, going through that real quick. And I'll actually probably link this in the description, because that's a really, really cool tool.
Yeah,
that magic quiz where you can find out your colors, that gives you a real quick kind of like, this is a good idea to keep in mind for this thing.
Well, yeah, we talked about it on one of the previous DM workshops where it's the tool that not specifically that quiz, but just the Magic the Gathering color identity is a tool that I really like using for NPCs. And so, you know, like, quick example, the Frog Society is very like green, black. Right.
They're very, very traditional. And the black definitely comes into play with being pretty selfish.
They're super insular. They're super selfish. And it's, you know, green, black is kind of like survival of the fittest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Originally, I was thinking of having Kane go in there, but now that, like, I immediately dismissed it. Originally, my idea was, everything would be all friendly. Kane would just eat a shitload of food like Goku and then just pass out. But I immediately saw the issue with that. So Kane's a frog person, right? Number one issue with having him there is and the issue with a lot of DMPCs, number one, as soon as something comes up, every player is going to turn to the DMPC to be like, oh, okay, well, what should I do there?
Yeah,
especially
never
because
use
he's already
DMPCs.
A frog. Yeah.
Never use DMPCs.
And then even then, thinking past that immediately, I was like, wait, well, okay. If Kane eats a bunch of stuff and passes out, that's immediately going to put it into their minds, oh, he was poisoned. Or, oh, right. This town is against us.
And I'm assuming that Kane is, yeah, your character,
yeah,
from the game. You want them to just be not there. Because assuming that they're a frog person, you could just easily have the explanation of he's too close to the issue, right?
Yeah, yeah. We can't send people out to these. Yeah. Kane's got the weekend off.
Yeah. So, I would say you just want a good understanding of what this character, the leader of the, you know, the orphaned kids society is like. And you want it to be a decent, like, legitimate society. Don't fall for the trap of just making them, like, tribal savages, blah, blah, blah. Just have them be, you know, down on their luck. Or living a harsh but sustainable life, right? They're all going to be very good survivalists. They're going to know the swamps very well, and they're going to be well accustomed and well suited to surviving in them. They just don't have the, you know, the infrastructure. So you're going to want to have a good idea of what that character is like, so that if the players talk to them, you'll be able to jump into character and talk to them as that guy. But you want to have that whole thing get, you know, probably cut a bit short by the mayor or whoever is in charge showing up and forcing them out, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all Ripjaw clan boys have some nerd be showing your faces around here, or blah, 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 right?
Yeah, big old hockey.
Told you not to come round these parts. Go on, get.
Swinging his knobbly little stick at him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, that sort of thing, and then, you know, have the crowd go with that, and you're like, yeah, you're right, get them out of here, and then they, you know, like, they turn, like, spit on the ground and leave, and
mm-hmm.
and all that, and that sets up a dynamic for the players to latch onto, to identify with. You want it to be, you know, like, have somebody in the crowd yell, like, you know, give me back that medicine you stole, or give me back that spear, you know, like, when are you going to return the money you took, or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, have
now,
people
one of the
accuse
things,
them of stuff.
Yeah, accuse them, but don't show them actively doing a crime.
Right.
That's going to lead to a combat. If someone kills, well, even if they kill them, I could easily, you know, work it from there. But one of the things that I was thinking of is I wasn't sure quite how to implement them taking in the sights and sounds of the village during this event. Or if I should make it any more important than just, hey, here's some fun stuff. I came up with a bunch of fun different frog foods and silly shit.
So for that,
I think
one
it'll
thing
come up
that
during
like
the investigation.
Do, yeah, one thing that I like to do is have the players describe it. Give them some engagement there. Like, it's a big stand, like, tell them it's a big old festival, Creole frogs and all that stuff.
Okay.
Like, tell me where you guys go. Like, what sort of fun activities do you think would be around there? And assuming that they're actually, like, having some fun with it, you know, they might say, like, I'm gonna go, like, see if they've got any carnival fair games, and then have some carnival fair games, and
that's
like,
actually
I'm gonna
a pretty
go
good
see
idea.
If there's
I
any,
like that.
I'm gonna go see if there's any food stands, and then have, like, a wacky event happen at a food stand with, like a hilarious misunderstanding about what is actually on that stick. You know, somebody's like, I'm serious McSerious guy, I want to go see the potion shop, and then have, like, a street vendor with a bunch of wacky potions. You know, like
okay.
Crazy Crokey's Potion Emporium, and they buy some shitty potions, right?
Mm-hmm. And I like that idea, because if I'm, because two of these three players are very new. One of the rogue is like, they have a hard time like kind of getting into the game, and that
yeah.
would be a really fun way to be like, okay, Marcosius, what are you gonna do? And then, you know, if they're struggling a bit, you know, kind of help them with some of the other players suggesting some things. But having them help build it makes them more invested into what's actually happening in the game.
I'm not entirely sure if you can do this in Roll 20, but something that Michael actually did when we played a game with him that was a similar, like, you know, there are a lot of new players. Everybody but me was a new player. Brand new. Is when we got to the first major area, like the first big old city, he pulled out the map, gave us all a marker, and was like, we're all going to take turns and describe a landmark, store, and draw part of the road, right? So let the players design the city during the fair. Like, if you can do it in Roll20, give them all a marker and give them all a pen and go in turns and, like, you know, draw part of the road and then, or, like, you know, part of the wooden beam structures and everything, and then say, okay, what's over here? Tell me. And then use that map later. I like that idea. Later.
That's fun. I like that.
So, you know, then, like, it's a big old fair. What's going on? Tell me. And players, I've found that players really like that, and I really like it because it lets you build something that is engaging for your character. Like, in that game that we played, I was playing a forest robot guy, like a little forest guardian, so, who was also an artificer. And so I was like, I'm going to go beeline straight for the, you know, the local mechanic shop.
Let's see. Now, I'm wondering if, because I really want to do it. Skills challenges are always a lot of fun. And so I'm trying to think of a good, now, would I be able to have that as part of the carnival celebrations?
I would avoid it. I would say you want your first skills challenge to be, the first skills challenge should be one of either, depending on how they do their investigation. You don't want the investigation to be a skills challenge because it puts a hard cap on the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
You should have the skills challenge be the thing that happens as a result of figuring it out. So either they find out that the Ripjaw clan did it, and or the Ripgill clan did it, and, you know, like, they see some of their tracks in the swamp and now they gotta go chase them. Or they investigate a house and they find the activist who took the jars, and then, you know, they show off they've got some skills and they, like, smoke bomb the place, grab the jars and vanish, and they start, like, you know, frog hopping across festival stands and all that, and then you got a fun chase scene. If it's one of the church guys, then you've got, you know, like a more like a cold case, like, tracking thing, and then they've got to, you know, like, they got to find the guy, and then they got to, you know, like, maybe they've got to maybe it even takes longer and they have to go back and, like, do some research and figure out who could have done it, right?
Yeah, look at the church archives. Who has been out here between now and the last time they had this event? Speak with the mayor, and the mayor tells them, you know, like, oh, the person I gave it to. You know, it could be he even, if they suspect the church, it could even be, well, I already gave it to you. Just about 3 days ago, right before the event started.
Yeah, and then, that could be an option.
What did that guy look like? And then that's where they can, if they start feeling that
leads. Yeah, that one I think you might want to avoid just because it leads to them assuming the church has the best intentions. It leads to somebody having impersonated a church member and doing a nefarious thing with that, which then puts in their minds that they're the good guys doing it.
Mm. Yeah, that's true.
So I would go with that route. Only if specifically the players don't like either side necessarily, right? If both sides are like, fuck both of these guys, then I would have it be that there was a, and they're like, well, this church thing, we don't want to take it either and give it back to them. If they go for the, we don't like any of this, right? We don't want to help them find it because they're just going to do fucked up stuff with it. We don't want to give it to the swamp kids because they're just going to do messed up stuff with it. And we don't want to give it to the church. Then you have it be there was, you know, a rogue church member, a defector who took them and is now, like, going to give it to the Ripgill clan to raise them right, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that. That's if they that's if they reject everything. Which is unlikely.
Most roads lead to that Ripjaw. They just take different routes to get there.
Yeah, and that's kind of the secret, is that all roads lead to Rome, or you don't have to railroad the players to get to scenes that you want to get to. You just have the choices that they make lead to the scene that you want. And you can have that happen organically. You know, like, you don't assume in a game with big old branching paths, like if you're playing a novel video game, there's still going to be big actions that occur that are more or less set. That's, you know, the plot. but how they get to the plot can be very different. And you also have to give them an out to do completely different shit. Because there is the option that they just don't care. At which point you're going to have to be able to think on your feet and adapt and be willing to adapt. And that you can't really brainstorm out. You just have to have a good sense for who the characters are and then build from the player's actions. Because this could very easily build towards them going full rogue. They could just take all of the jars for themselves from these people and then go like, we're not taking these, like, we're not going to take these guys back to the church or give them to the Ripgills. We're going to, you know, like, we're going to build our own orphanage or something like that. And you have to give them the opportunity to do that.
Because if they set something up with that, if anyone sets up anything, as long as it's not, you know, completely fucking stupid and not conducive to a fun game, it sucks to be told, well, no, actually, you can't. One of the things that happened with the second game, this is kind of an example of what happens if you don't take into account the player motivations.
Mm-hmm.
It was, so it started off, we were on a, so the way that the DM described it was they were going kind of like classic D&D stuff where like drow are evil.
Evil.
And so they're considered by the church to be evil and evil. Awful people. And so what happened is we had a drow with us on the car ride, and then we got attacked by elves, and then Solomon's like, oh, chick, all right then. And so he ended
up set us up.
Yeah, he's like, oh, the drow set us up for this, tie her up, and then we went to our thing, and we just ended up, because what she intended for the game to go was, and
this
I
was
very
a
clearly
good
see
drow.
It, yeah, I could very clearly out of character see the exact story bit she wanted us to follow, but in character, there was absolutely no reason for me to follow him. If you're saying that the church considers these drow completely evil and everything, and that's what everyone thinks of them as, then that's what we gotta do. Like,
right.
That's what Solomon's doing, and I'm not gonna go against Solomon.
Right, which is why for this one, I think it's very important that the players not have a specific cut-and-dry doctrine as to what the church does with these tadpoles.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You want to have it be ambiguous. You want to have it be that they were explicitly misinformed. That they were told that this thing was just some holy artifact or magical artifact or something like that, and if they open the bag, then something bad will happen. And that's not the case at all. Right? That's just a bold-faced lie. You want the official spiel to be wrong for that, and you want it to be explicitly wrong and very clearly and not have any room for misinterpretation. Because in the drow situation, it's very obvious for the players, if they're believers, that they go, okay, this fucking drow set us up. Drow are evil. That's a rational explanation if you have that backstory. It's not what the DM wanted.
Yeah, even if
but
I knew
they didn't
as a player,
establish it.
Yeah, this person was supposed to lead us to here. We're supposed to do the XYZ. My hands are tied, DM.
Yeah. They didn't properly establish it. They wanted it to be ambiguous and vague. But people put way too much stock in being ambiguous and vague as a good mechanic for teaching, like, for showing their plot. Because all that being that ambiguous and vague really does is give more room for misinterpretation and for misunderstandings. So they do their big old search thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you want to avoid railroading them. You don't want to have an unreasonable chain of cause and effect. Which is why you want to have multiple contingency plans that change and shift based on what they do. You want to have multiple scenes in mind that trigger based on their actions. You know, like
based
you have
on
a flag
what
system,
for.
Right? Think of it, you know, like the flags in like a visual novel or something like that, right? Where if you select this dialogue option, this scene is going to get triggered, you know, five scenes down the line.
Yeah, so like, for example, if they go back and speak to Old Man Jenkins, who's been here for so long, he can give them like, oh, this is blah 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 blah. This is what's happened the last few times we did this. Now that they've gotten like they're on neutral, if they're not on like bad terms with the people in the town right now, the people in the town are okay with them going to try and figure out what happened. Then they can speak with this guy. He can give them a little bit more info. If everything's gone to shit, then on the outside of town, oh, there's some tracks. You can see this looks like there was a boat that was put here very recently. Where does this go? Ripgill. You know, if everything's gone to shit and they've got like they've burned every bridge possible, it's still possible to do it through this like a last thing.
Right. And if they choose to not follow the tracks and they just fuck up, then something that you could very easily have happen is the if they burn every bridge and they fuck everything up and it's completely their fault, which is possible, that they botch their investigation, they don't reasonably find any leads, they just stick around with their thumb up their butts and just don't do anything, then on their way back, you have them get, like, ambushed by one of the Ripgill clan guys, and they're like, where's the other jar? There were supposed to be three in the place, we only got two of them, where's the other jar? I know you bastards have it.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good way to do it.
Right? And then they're like, we don't even know anything. They're like, don't play dumb with me, you bastards, and something like that. And if they... In order to tell them about how the coming of age ceremony is, you've got a bunch of outs too. If they go talk to the old man frog boy, he's like, you know, our kids these days, they're going soft. When back in my day, we had to survive in the swamp for 2 weeks, and we had to use our
kicking legs to kick back them goddamn gators.
But these days, there ain't no more gators around. As a result of all,
we done ate all their tails.
We done ate too many of the gators. There ain't no more gators now. Kids, they got it easy, and they're like, "Wait, what the hell are you talking about?" He's like, and then he goes, "Oh, I'm a senile old man. I wasn't supposed to tell you about that."
I wasn't supposed to tell you about that. Takes the bite out of the gator tail.
Yeah.
I'm just an old man spitting gator tails.
Yeah. Right? You have somebody somehow spill the beans.
Mm-hmm.
That these kids are being sent to fight for their lives in the swamp. So, assuming things go to plan, or at least reasonably to plan, you're going to want to have a big chase or an investigation, like a tracking thing. That could be your skills challenge. Then you're going to want a combat of some sort, right? Because you want a combat.
Yeah, yeah.
So this can happen in a couple of different ways. They can either end up fighting the Ripgill people if they want to get the jars back, right? And everything goes to shit. You probably want like a diplomatic scene once you get to them and they start talking about things, or they end up having to fight like the mayor and his cronies.
Yep, they end up on the wrong side of Pollywog Pond.
Yeah, exactly. You know, how do you get out of the swamp? Chick, back the way you came. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have them go like, I don't even, you know, like, we don't even think y'all were part of the church. Gonna have to, y'all know too much now. Right? And all of that nonsense. So, you either have that be the thing, you know, like when they, you know, you have the big problem is that you don't want to have the fight be immediately in the Ripgill clan place, because then they've got a bunch of people backing them and that wouldn't make any sense. So you're probably going to want to have the fight come as a result of them trying to get a hold of the jars, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if they go down the route of if you're going down the route of the Ripgill clan are the good guys, then you're going to want to have it so that the bad guys in the situation, either some other church operatives or the mayors. The mayor or, you know, church operatives plus mayor or something like that, they get the jars back, right? They show up, big old display of force. They get the jars back, or, you know, subterfuge. Some people show up, you know, grab them and dash, and now the party's got to go get them back, right?
Gotcha.
You know, like it turns into a tense situation, and like, you know, have them hold them hostage or whatever, right? Like we're just gonna release all of them off into the swamp right now ahead of schedule. If anybody other than these guys show up, you know, you all come alone and we'll hash this out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have that be the setup for the fight to give them a justification for the Ripkill guys not showing up. Of course, having the contingency plan of, like, if the combat goes horrifically south, you can have a couple of those guys show up and, like, and assist.
Yeah, yeah. Because, definitely, I definitely like the way that we handle combat and revival at Dungeon Dragon Drill Play Podcast way more than, because in those other games that we played, there would be small fights against enemies that really didn't pose any kind of threat at all.
Yeah.
That I never had the chance of, like, oh, I'm fighting these three snakes as Cain, and they can't hit me because I'm so goddamn beat. He has more health than John at level one, dude. It's nuts. Wardens are absolutely busted. They are beefy.
Wardens are very fun.
But, fighting mook enemies isn't really that fun.
Yeah, you want your fights to be important. I don't like having combat unless it's actually important and there is a distinct risk involved. So I would say you're going to want to do, like, you're going to want to have some sort of big climax to that situation, right? You come in, they talk things over with the Ripkill clan, or they fight them. And then you have another source of conflict. They realize we've been had, some more church operatives show up, or like maybe that rogue church operative guy shows up, and, you know, depending on the room and depending on how things are going, and then you build off of that into your big fight scene. Mm-hmm. Preferably utilizing that map that the players built.
Yes, I was just thinking, so if a player, because I'll make sure to, you know, stress to them the different things that are about the village and let them use that to build. So if someone makes an amphitheater, you know, an amphibitheater, that's a good stage right there.
Yeah.
If someone makes, someone puts together a, some kind of outcropping of the village into, like, the water that's, like, a real long fishing dock or something. Something. There's, you know, you could turn anything into a combat section if you really needed to.
Right. So the big points of tension here are the Ripkill clan was very clearly going to attempt to throw the party under the bus, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to steal the jars, blame it on them, and then hopefully, best case scenario, the frogs, you know, like the frogs give up and they go, we can't go against the church, right? That was their plan. Like, kind of naive, right?
Yeah, it's not going to solve any long-term issues.
It's very short-sighted, very naive.
It's not going to magically, because the best case scenario would be to convince the townsfolk that this ritual is a bad idea and that they should get rid of it because it doesn't really have it doesn't serve a purpose anymore. Now that they don't need to have this Spartan practice, because as part of trading with the church now, they have access to all of the things that they need. They don't have to worry about having they don't have to worry about, like, we're only going to have so many people still alive at this point in time. We need to make sure everyone is... They don't have to worry about that as much anymore.
Yeah, there is the option for the hard diplomacy route. Like, this whole thing is messed up, and you want to have that be an option as well. So then the contingency plan for that comes in of, how do we still get an interesting game out of that? And the answer is, you have that be... If they go for the hard diplomacy route, then they also get a hard smack in the face of the church... It's not that the church necessarily didn't want, like, that they weren't capable of solving this issue and doing away with this ritual. It's that they didn't necessarily want to.
Because they were getting free, free churchgoers out of it. They were getting these people here.
They were getting free churchgoers out of it. And if you wanted to make the church like explicitly bad guys, then you also say, well, there's way too many of these damn frogs. Keeps their numbers down. Right? Like, if they solve this and then they go back and they go, problem solved, chief, we did away with the ritual, then you have them just get a, great job, guys, great job, and then have somebody else from the church go and undo all of that crap, right?
Yeah, go right back in there.
Just hose them, right? And then have that be the, or at least, like, try to. You don't want to undo success of the players, but you do want to have them, like, you want to have it have unintended consequences of, well, great job, we got rid of the ritual, and we'll send out a group to go dispatch those what are they called, Ripgill Clan? Yeah, we'll go get rid of them.
Yeah, we'll go exterminate them so they don't bother those town folk. Don't worry about it. Thanks for letting us know where they were.
Yeah.
Definitely if I want to push them towards the church is a bunch of fucking dickheads, aren't they? Maybe yeah. This isn't a good idea to be with them.
Yeah. If they settle everything amicably, then the church comes in and strong arms it, right? The church, you want to have it, if they solve everything amicably, actually you want to have one of their higher ups show up and like in the village and give them a whole, what the hell are you doing? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we expected you to keep your fucking nose out of our business and do what we told you to. And they're like, but we did a better job. It's like, yeah, but it's not the job that we told you to do. And then have that transition into, ooh, maybe these guys aren't great.
Yep. Yeah, this is, I think I've got a very solid idea of how this is going to go now.
You just want a framework. Is the thing. Yeah. You don't want to play in too deep into any one outcome. You want to have a set piece in mind for meeting the Ripgill Clan, you know, what that place looks like, who talks to who, potential spreading conflict chains and shit like that. Mm-hmm. You want to have a scene for Bigwig McBad Guy from the church shows up. You want to have a scene for the party meets the resistance leader, or like the revolutionary, in her hut or in their house or whatever, and then it leads to the festival market chase scene theme. You want, or the festival market chase scene. You want to have the dangerous swamp expedition tracking scene, and you want to have just those in mind. And depending on what the players do, you pick and choose. You pick and choose from those scenes that you've made to make a cohesive story. You just have a bunch of scenes, and then you figure out how to link them.
And that's really, because that'll also, because if I try and over-prepare for every one of these, all, not only will it end up with a lot of them not being used, I'll probably burn myself out. Like, if I was doing a full campaign, because this is only a one-shot. You'll burn yourself out
super quick. And there's no point in statting people up. You don't, like, who gives a shit what the mayor's perception check is, right? Who gives a shit what the level of the leader of the Ripgill Clan is? Who cares? Come up with a reasonable stat on the fly. Like, depending on what is needed, come up with something and stick to it. Like, if you need to do an opposed perception and like, bluff check, just very quickly go, what would be reasonable for this guy to have? Well, he's really good at it. I'm going to say a 10. Roll with the intention of having a 10. Just do that. Because so many times people spend way too much time fiddling with the minutia and with figuring out, like, who exactly does what, that mm-hmm. they entirely miss the forest for the trees. So, main goals for the one shot are pieces of information that you want to teach the players. It's good to have a bullet list of things you want them to learn. So first off is church is doing shady stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Secondly is something along the lines of, not everything is what it seems. The Frog People's Festival has a darker side to it. We want to teach them about that. Third is, your actions have consequences, and what you decide to do can absolutely shape the world around you. And those are the big, you know, touch points that you want to emphasize. For specific characters, considering that the Frog People are super superstitious, you want to have a couple of situations and you want to have a couple of characters where they blame the disappearance of the jars on, like, some weird curse or, like, some prophecy or something like that. You want to have some, like, magical warding that's obfuscating the trail, right? You want to have magical fuckery that only the wizard can deal with. You want situations where they're going to be like, there's a ceiling sigil on this place. We can't get in. You have a wizard. Do it. Wizard, do it. Help. Or you go, like, you say, like, it seems like, but the door was completely locked. And, you know, there's no signs of tampering on the door. So, you know, the only person who possibly could have taken the jars out of this place must have been a wizard. So you did it, wizard. Right? And then you bring the wizard to the scene and you go, how did they do it? You ask them, how did they break into this room and get these jars out of here without anybody noticing? Like, what did they do? And you have him decide. You go, like, if he goes, like, clearly they must have a very talented wizard with them, because only a wizard could have done X, Y, Z.
And even then, I can see the character, like, going into a very in-depth explanation and pointing out every single thing. And just be like, yep, that's probably how they did it. Not realizing how suspicious that makes him look.
Yeah. That's, basically, you want to have the contrast between superstitious but magically ignorant townsfolk and professional wizard, and give him a chance to shine. You want to give the rogue, you know, for the rogue, you want to have them have, like, you want them to, like, find some lock-picking tools, maybe, or, you know, see some people in the shadows, or notice that they're being followed, and have the rogue go, like, hold up, guys, we're being followed, you know. We're going to have to track these guys down using my amazing rogue talents.
Yeah, something the wizard is best suited for, something the rogue is best suited for, something that
and
that,
then I'm
Solomon's,
assuming that Solomon is kind of like probably the more diplomatic guy, right?
Yeah, he's the face of the party.
Right,
for lack
so you
of a
have
term.
Solomon be the guy who's talking to people, and you have them engage with him because he's the holy noble guy from the church, and he's big and important. So you want to make sure that at every turn, you're giving a character a moment to shine. And then you want to have the big ensemble scenes be the points where they all shine. So you want whatever scenes you pick from that list that you've got of scenes in your head, you want the action and the conflict to be driven by something different. So, for example, you don't want to have everything be magical, otherwise it's just going to feel, everybody else is going to feel left out. So if one of the scenes is, like, you know, magically driven with, like, say the, like, let's say that you had the investigation be more the rogue's bag, where they physically break into everything and, you know, you find some, like, lockpick tools, you find some locked doors and some secret text and some markings on windows that indicate, you know, like, points of entry that somebody marked right when they were casing the joint and things like that. Then you want to have the chase scene that results, if you go with the chase scene, to be magical in nature. Or vice versa, right? Just make sure that there's a good balance.
Yeah, these are all really great things, and these are applicable to pretty much, I mean, these are applicable both to entire campaigns, because, you know, each stage of what's happening, one-shots, these are all really good things to keep in mind, just kind of as a whole.
Yeah, exactly. It generally just comes down to the basic philosophy of how you build your games, and I'm of the opinion that you should absolutely build around your players and build towards things that they would enjoy. Because it doesn't matter if you find it interesting if the players and the characters don't find it interesting. So specifically, since you said that the characters needed some room to grow, and that they were, you know, you were setting up for the church being set up to be bad guys, you want to give them that opportunity. It would be a lot different, and you could really be a bit more open-ended if you had more character information, but considering that the characters are still pretty underdeveloped, this is a good springboard to get them to a more developed state by giving them decisions.
Yeah, giving them the opportunities to be like, okay, well, the little bits of character that you wanted to try, here's an opportunity, take this and see what you can do with it. See how you think you're going to do. Take this opportunity to do a thing with your character. You know, I'll hold your hand through it for a bit. It's like teaching a child how to ride like a tiny bike.
Right. You know? You got to give them the opportunity to decide how their character wants to be. You know, it's like any good starting point in an RPG or any good, like, first act of a book where the characters are put in situations that require hard decisions to be made that then inform the viewer, or in this case, inform the player, of that character's traits, motivations, personality, etc. And it's very good to build those traits and that personality, you know, on the spot in the field by giving these new characters these sort of open-ended decision trees.
And I think now that we're pushing kind of near 2 hours, I think this is kind of a good point to end it on in here. It's a lot of information. I have the game coming up in just a few days.
Oh, geez.
We might do a small campaign. If I don't have this one ready yet, which I might not, I might only have a little bit. Because it's in 2 days. If I don't have it ready by then I've got like a real small one I could just do to get them used to combat, skill challenge, stuff like that. And then by the Sunday after that, I'll have my Roll 20 maps done. I'll have everything written down that I want to do in that campaign. I'll have all these moments like, okay, this leads to act, bop, 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 bop. These
little
you know what I mean. I'm kind of describing it bad, but
yeah.
I'll have these ideas in place that I could pick and choose. Like, okay, they're going down this route. Let's put these up here, see which one they choose. Oh, okay, they didn't choose that one. Well, they chose this one. Well, we'll change it a little bit due to how they did this thing earlier in the session and work my way around that by having all of these ideas that I can pick, modulate, and kind of like choose from to make it fun for everyone involved.
Yeah. My last bit of advice for that is don't plan things out in too much detail. Take a page from Fate, and for each decision or whatever, for each big scene that you want, just write down like one quick sentence, right? You know, just one quick sentence that describes the scene. Like for example,
the burgoo is about to be served and it's revealed the jars are missing.
Right. Like, reveal that the jars are missing. Tense diplomatic talks with the Ripgill clan. Frantic chase through festival streets. And that's it. You don't want to go past that. So you just have that idea in your mind, and then you build it on the fly. And you want to always, always, always build off of players' actions. You want scenes to transition and you want action to take place as a result of what players have done. Every time.
That's the best way to have someone enjoy playing. Because remember, the only thing worse than no D&D is bad D&D.
Exactly.
So I guess it's actually been so long since the last one. I don't remember if that was like a thing that we said every time. I don't remember.
I don't think it is. I think it's a catchphrase.
I've said it at least once. Get that on a t-shirt. Get that on a t-shirt as well as a revival. Dungeons & Dragons Real Play Podcast t-shirt.
We don't have those. I wish we did, but we don't.
I'm going to make a revival. A Dungeons & Dragons Real Play Podcast t-shirt and give it to you when I see you at Evo.
There is no way you will have a t-shirt. If you do, I'll be impressed.
There's many things that I can do. One of those things is do the shout-outs at the end of an episode. So, good episode here. A lot of really fun info. I'm looking really forward to playing the game. You can find the podcast here on YouTube, iTunes, and Google Play alongside Revival, a Dungeons & Dragons real play podcast. Oh, also there's like a Discord and a Patreon and an email that's letmetellyouabout@gmail.com. Let me tell you about the three T's because otherwise it wouldn't fit.
Which is a bold-faced lie, but you know, still.
And then that's all for me. What about you, Daniel?
You can find me on Revival, Dungeons & Dragons real play podcast, where I DM that game. You can also find me and my brother Michael on Twitch at twitch.tv/pro_operatives, where we stream games and the like. He is actually currently in the other room day drinking while streaming Civ 4.
And I've spent roughly the past 2 hours day drinking while recording a podcast. See you guys next time.